but at underscore Adam Crowley, quote, you sound like a leaking penis, end quote. I did not know that a leaking penis made a sound, but that great tweet brought to you by Labatt Blue Light Seltzer. They're refreshing. This segment brought to you by 84 Lumber, your hometown building partner, and by Armstrong, keeping you connected. 'Twas the night before college football, and Pitt fans flocked to Heinz Field. Know it or not, their fate was already sealed. Chris Bickle, 97, head coach Patrick Narduzzi is coming with his bag of tricks, but Pitt football is destined to finish 6-6. That dude was on the Pitt Football Propaganda Network, or as Mark calls them, the B team this morning. Said the media is sleeping on his Pittsburgh Panthers. Jesus Christo. All this dude does is blah, 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 blah. All bravado. Pitt was picked fourth in the ACC Coastal, and seems about right. They got a first place vote, probably from Pat Narduzzi. Seems about right. They were sixth in the league last year. They're not being disrespected. Track record has been taken into account. Fourth in the division implies being average. And what have you got from Pitt under Chris Bickle, 97, head coach Pat Narduzzi? You've got an average. Narduzzi touted that the team played for the ACC championship in 2018, and that's true. They also went 7-7 that year. They're 1-3 in bowl games under Chris Bickle, 97, head football coach Pat Narduzzi. The bowl game that they won, they beat Eastern Michigan. I can't even remember if that's the Michigan school that Charlie Batch went to. He went to one of them. Not a big school. Chris Peek over at Panther Lair, and I say this not tongue-in-cheek, it's a really good site. But he says, he predicts that this is the year that Pitt finally breaks through. It had better be. The quarterback's been here for 14 seasons. It's time for action, not just words. Whatever happened to speak softly and carry a big stick? But Pat talks like a guy without a big stick. Like those dudes you see on the highway with the giant tires and the tricked out pickup trucks with the nuts hanging off the back. You know, that guy ain't got a big stick. That's what Pat Narduzzi reminds me of. 412-333-9939. Tweet me at underscore Adam Crowley. The Steelers don't play for 9 days, and I think they've already made a coaching mistake. I'm big Mike Tomlin guy, by the way. Card-carrying member of the Mike Tomlin fan club. I like him more than I think Gen Pop does. Zach Banner, though, on IR, and I don't like this decision. Mike Tomlin and his coaching cohorts, they're going to screw around with two positions by way of trying to fix one. They're plugging in rookie Dan Moore Jr. at left tackle. Their starting left tackle, Chuks Okorafor, is now going to play right tackle. But all offseason long, from fans, bloggers, X's and O types, analytic types, coaches alike have told me that Chuks Okorafor is better on the left side, should play that side as opposed to the right. Now he's playing right, where last year he was average. I don't like it. Okorafor playing his weaker position, and now you've got a rookie protecting Ben Roethlisberger's blind side. Not just any rookie, but a rookie who's a fourth round pick. And Mark Caboli was on the program yesterday, and he said he struggles with speed rushers. So you've got a rookie on the blind side protecting your franchise who's 39 years old, and he's bad at defending the speed rusher. Everyone's excited about Matt Canada's new offense, right? Everyone's so happy to see Randy Feakner out the door. And I get it, because Randy Feakner was limited. No razzle-dazzle, the play calling lacked imagination. It just made you want more. I don't think for the first three games, at the very least, you're going to see all that much different. You think Ben Roethlisberger is going to be running play action, seven-step drops, and attacking down the field whenever you've got Dan Moore Jr. blocking at left tackle? You're going to see more of the motions, and you're going to see more unbalanced lines, probably more two tight end sets, things of that nature. So that'll be different. But you're going to see a lot in the early going of the similar stuff to what you saw last year, which is Ben Roethlisberger getting rid of the ball in 2.2 seconds. I stuttered there longer than it's going to take for Ben Roethlisberger to get the ball from his hand to his wide receivers. And it became so predictable last year for the opposition. So much so that they lost to the Bengals without Joe Burrow in one of the worst offensive performances I've ever seen against a heinously bad defense. If you hated what you saw out of the Steelers offense last year, you're going to hate what you see out of the passing game this year. The one thing that is the saving grace, potentially, and hopefully if you're a Steelers fan, is that they've got a bona fide STUD stud running back in Najee Harris, because I do believe he's the real deal. But I think this is a big-time mistake by Mike Tomlin and the Steelers coaching staff to take a guy and play him at his worst of the two positions in Chukwuemeka Okorafor, and to take a rookie and protect Ben Roethlisberger's blind side. What say you? 412-333-9939, 412-333-WXDX. The NHL has made a deal that will allow players to participate in the Olympics. This is great for fans. This is great for me. This is great for you. You can't remember what happened in 2018. There's no more Miracle on Ice, some dude you never heard of doing something really cool. No, it doesn't even capture anybody's imagination. I watched. I really did. Don't remember what happened. Why? Because it just doesn't grab you the way it does when you've got the NHL players playing overseas or playing in the Olympics. We can all remember TJ Oshie. We can all remember Zach Parise and Sidney Crosby back in the Golden Goal game. We can all remember Ryan Miller getting cheered here in Pittsburgh by our fans and Sidney Crosby getting miffed because he didn't get the same kind of recognition whenever he scored the golden goal. Like, we remember stuff like that. It's great for fans. If you are a hockey person, then this is good for you. What it's not good for, though, I don't think, is the league itself. I went back, I looked at TV numbers, and in the NBC era, we have not seen the numbers go up in Olympic seasons. We have not seen NBC, the NHL, bring on one single new viewer who said, "Oh, I like what I'm seeing with the Olympics, and now I want to watch the NHL product." It didn't happen. Attendance didn't go up. Hardcore hockey fans like this. The casual hockey fan may well view now with the NHL players in the Olympics, but to think that it's going to bring anything to the NHL, I think, ignores a lot of data. And it's at a very great risk for Gary Bettman's league, and it's at great risk for the owners. I wouldn't want my players playing overseas. I wouldn't want my players playing in the Olympics. Evgeny Malkin's going to rehab a knee injury all year long, and then guess what? He's going to go and play for Mother Russia, throw everything on the line to try to win a gold medal so that he's not, along with Alexander Ovechkin, a laughingstock nationally? A lot of pressure on that dude. I would imagine, if you're an owner, you wouldn't love that situation. But I don't care about the owners. I care about me, so I'm going to love it. 412-333-9939. The Pirates lost last night. Willem Dafoe, whatever, misplayed a pop-up on the infield. This year, they've lost a game last night on the misplayed pop-up. They've had a botched rundown by a first baseman that was so bad he had to defect. And they had a home run that counted as an out because the runner missed first base. That's all in one season. When you don't see that happen, all those things in a 10-year stretch. The team is a disaster, a laughingstock, a joke. But you already knew that. 412-333-9939. Tweet me at _AdamCrowley. More on the mistake that Mike Tomlin has already made and a trade that the Steelers made that's going to help them big time, I think, potentially this year. Crowley in for Mark, 105.9.
Mattress Warehouse, sleephappens.com.
From the Century 3 Chevrolet Traffic Center.
Jammed up on the parkway.
Very good point.
VX at 105.9.
Crowley in for Madden. Every time the Steelers draft a cornerback, it's, is this guy going to be any good? Because the Steelers suck at drafting cornerbacks, right? That's the prevailing thought, I think, among Steelers fans. Is this guy going to be any good, really? I don't know. Artie Burns, we saw how that worked out, and Terry Hawthorne, and the list goes on and on. Senquez Golson. But shouldn't it be exactly the opposite when you're talking about the Steelers going after guys via trade or free agency at the cornerback position? The Steelers have obviously done enough self-scouting, right? Where they know what they're good at and what they're not good at. You do it at every bye week. You start looking at yourself. You say, you know what? We run the ball 45% of the time on first down. Let's switch that up a little bit. On third and eight, we like to run this play and that play and this play and that play more than anything else. You do your self-scouting. You figure out what you're bad at or where you might be tipping your hand. The Steelers, I think they know they haven't done a great job of acquiring corners through the draft. So they've changed up the way they've gone about of getting those guys. Joe Hayden, a gift dropped into their laps from their baby brother, Cleveland Browns. Released, the Steelers sign him. He's been great. Pro Bowl player for Pittsburgh. They shouldn't sign him to an extension because he's going to be 33, but great player for the Steelers thus far. Steve Nelson, Kansas City. He was targeted as much as any cornerback in football, gave up some big plays. Steelers said, you know what? Let's kick the tires. And they paid him a lot of money relative to what the Steelers have handed out in free agency. He turned out to be really good for them. I think they made a mistake this year by letting him walk. Or by releasing him, I should say. But Steve Nelson turned out really good. Joe Hayden turned out really good. Mike Hilton, scrap heap, the New England Patriots, the genius Bill Belichick, 6-time Super Bowl champion. We don't got a use for Mike Hilton. Mike Hilton 1 year had 7 sacks as a corner. Timed up blitzes perfectly. Really good in the run game. Got his nose dirty. Steelers said, we can make a guy. We can make a use for this guy. So when the Steelers, they make their trade today for Witherspoon, from Seattle, I think you have to say, you know what? The Steelers, they're probably getting a pretty good player here. Pro Football Focus has him ranked as the 4th best corner in football, at least according to the grades from last year. Now in 2018, he was the 5th worst corner in all of football. So take that for what it's worth. You are allowed to get better in. Looks like he did get better last year. There's a reason why Seattle wanted him to be their starting left cornerback in their scheme this year. They thought he was going to be really good. Now, there's a reason why you let him go. But I've read now a couple of reports from different Seattle writers while we've been sitting here in the breaks, and Tom and I have been yucking it up about college football. And it seems to me that every Seattle beat writer is a little bit confused as to what went on here. By all accounts, Witherspoon had a good training camp, was really solid, reliable. These beat writers weren't marking down demerits at any point throughout preseason, or at least in camp. In the preseason, on a 4th down, he gave up a 35-yard pass. Not good. The only black mark against him the entire preseason or in training camp, according to multiple writers that I've been reading. So they're perplexed. Something weird going on there. But he graded out well last year. The Seahawks writers are perplexed. And the Steelers have had a track record recently of doing a good job of acquiring cornerbacks that were woebegone and forgotten by their former teams. This is going to work out, I think, for Pittsburgh. There are certain positions I don't give them benefit of the doubt on, depending on the way that they're acquired. And if they drafted a corner, I'd probably be sitting here going, I'm not all that excited about it. But this is a guy who's been in the league. He's played in about 40 games in the NFL. They feel like they got a pretty good read on this dude, that they know what he can provide. Do you trust the Steelers' evaluation as it relates to corners that they bring in, not through the draft, because I do. 412-333-9939. Tweet me at underscore Adam Crowley. This also tells me that while they like James Pierre, they don't love James Pierre, or they just would rather get a player that they know can play at this level because he has done so almost 40 times in the National Football League. It doesn't mean that they don't want James Pierre to be part of the future. It doesn't mean that he's not going to be the guy right off the shoot now. But what it tells me is we believe in Witherspoon and we know he's done it. And James Pierre, we think he's going to be good, but we don't know. All in all, a good move for the Steelers, and you didn't have to give up much to get him. 412-333-9939, tweet me at underscore Adam Crowley. Brian Bacco of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette going to be joining us in a little bit, about 7 minutes, to get into the trade and to talk about some other things. One of them being Chukwuma Okorafor not playing left tackle, but playing right tackle again. Dan Moore Jr. starting. Guy's not great at containing the speed rush. Playing left tackle. Don't like it. Scares me. I'm docking the Steelers a win or two from my original prediction of 9 or 10 wins. When you're starting guys who have never played before on the offensive line, two of them, and the guy in between them has only played 4 games, it's going to make me think twice. What do you think the communication is going to be like between those three, Green, Dotson, and Dan Moore Jr. against Buffalo in that madhouse coming up on the 12th? Those Buffalo fans have been waiting a long time for a team that they believe in, like the mid-1990s. They didn't get to watch them last year in the playoffs because they weren't allowed into that stadium. They weren't allowed to jump through tables outside. They weren't allowed to liquor themselves up, get all fired up for their squad. You don't think that place is going to be bonkers? You think there might be a few procedure penalties? You think there might be some signals missed? You think those guys might have some communication issues? I do. I'm doxing them at least an extra win because they're just so inexperienced. We'll talk to Brian Bacco about that and more coming up next. Crowley in for Madden, 105.9.
Partly to mostly cloudy tonight, dropping down to 56 degrees. For a Saturday, a mix of sun and clouds. Look for a high of 78.
This report is...
Oh, the American dream. So be it, baby.
The X at 105.9.
Crowley in for Madden. Be sure to check out the Crowley Show podcast. World-renowned. Available on iHeartRadio and wherever you get your podcasts. We're recording an episode immediately following today's award-winning Madden Show broadcast. Joining me now to get into the Steelers. They made a trade. It's Brian Bacco from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Bacco, thanks for joining me, man. What's up?
Not much. Just kind of excited to watch some college football this weekend. Pitt-UMass doesn't really... get the meter moving one way or the other for me. But West Virginia's got a fun one in Penn State, too.
You know what, Bacco? UMass Pitt might not do it for you, but how about Pitt minus 38.5 against UMass? Does that do it for you? Because, no, it still doesn't do it for me. Bacco, the Steelers made a trade. They get a Colo, if that's how you pronounce it, Witherspoon from Seattle. What does this say about James Pierre, and what does this guy have in the tank for Pittsburgh?
Well, I did some cursory research because I am such a sophisticated professional journalist. I believe it's pronounced Akello, not Akilo. So you nailed it, Crowley. Nice job. But, yeah, I think it's on paper it's a clear upgrade over Pierre, and I think I'd be a hypocrite if I poo-pooed this move because I was one of the people saying they don't have enough talent, depth, and experience in the secondary. That maybe they are, you know, one fry short of a happy meal there at cornerback. I would say it's a slight red flag, perhaps, that the Seahawks were, you know, signed this guy 5 months ago to be a starter, and then all of a sudden they're going to turn right around and trade him before they even saw him in a regular season game. That makes you say a little bit, but. Yeah, I think on paper this move makes sense for the Steelers. Maybe he'll just be a better fit here in their defense than he was in Seattle.
What's interesting is I read a number of beat writers' reaction to this from Seattle, and they all seem to be somewhat perplexed and surprised that he's no longer on the roster. He was brought in to be the starter, and then he sort of fell out of favor, but many of the people that I read seem to indicate he didn't do anything wrong in camp. He didn't do much of anything wrong. There was one play. He was docked for 35 yards in the preseason game. He was the fourth highest graded corner in the league last year, according to Pro Football Focus. So I wonder why Seattle didn't want him. Like you mentioned, maybe just not a fit for the defense.
Yeah, I was going to say, how much can you really do to fall out of favor in three preseason games? I'm not even sure. I didn't look this one up. I'm not even sure if he played in all of them. Obviously, he had a whole month of practices in camp, but you know, we say all the time when players do good things that practices are not the same as games, and you evaluate them and judge them differently. So, it does seem perplexing. Like I said, not too often a team trades a guy before they've even seen him. If it were, a game or two into the regular season, it would be less weird. But, really strange scenario. It just makes you wonder why'd they sign him in the first place. They knew him well from playing for a division rival in San Fran. I listened to an interview with him during camp a couple of weeks ago just now, and he seemed pretty pumped, and he's talking about the culture and Pete Carroll and Seattle. So, yeah, you wonder what went wrong. And from a Steelers perspective, I would have expected maybe they go after a slot corner type more than an outside corner. But, again, I would be hypocritical if I didn't give them credit for shoring up a position that I thought was a little thin.
Brian Batko from the Post-Gazette joining me, Adam Crowley filling in for Mark Madden here on 105.9 The X. From one corner to another, Joe Haden is not getting a contract from the Steelers, set to become an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year. I have a philosophy. It's pay good young players and let even good old players walk at the end of their deals. Do you think that's smart for the Steelers in this instance?
I think your philosophy is especially smart when you're talking about that specific position, cornerback. Yes. It's one thing if it's an O-lineman or a D-lineman, or as we know here, quarterback especially. But, yeah, I didn't think that they should kind of take him up on Drew Rosenhaus's offer there and rush to extend him. He has a great season, and then maybe even come back to the bargaining table. The one thing that I wonder about, I don't have any inside dirt on this, but just going off of how everything played out through Adam Schefter's reporting and then our interview with Haden like last week and then Hayden's tweet the other day about The Last Dance, I wonder if he's a little bit miffed that he was rebuffed and in that case wouldn't want to be back here next year. But every man's got a price, and if he plays well enough that the Steelers want to set that price for him, then you never say never.
What will the T.J. Watt contract look like when all the T's are crossed and I's are dotted?
I don't know, because even the experts on this type of thing, former agents and whatnot, they think it's going to be a very complex negotiation because of how the market was set by Myles Garrett and one of the Bosas. I can never remember. I think it was Joey. But also the fact that Aaron Donald and Khalil Mack signed those humongous deals a couple years ago. So it's just like, where do you slot this guy in? Where do you fit him in? If I'm Watt, I'm settling for nothing less than leapfrogging right to the top, which is going to make it tricky for the Steelers. And maybe they'll have to make a little bit of a compromise on guaranteed money. Maybe Watt will have to accept a little bit less in that regard than some of his contemporaries at the position. But all in all, I still think this gets done, Crowley. I'd be shocked if it didn't. And because I'm a sports writer who covers the Steelers, I imagine it will get done at the most inconvenient time for me. So let's think like 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock tonight when I'm a couple beers deep.
Or perhaps tomorrow at Pitt, -38.5 against UMass. Brian Batko joining me, Adam Crowley here, filling in for Mark Madden on 105.9 The X. Been talking about this all day. Why not play Chooks at left tackle, as originally discussed, and play Dan Moore Jr., who struggled against speed rushers, at right tackle? Why are they moving two guys around by way of trying to fix one position?
It makes me think that maybe they believe Tuke stinks at left tackle, or at least isn't as good at left tackle, and that maybe more comfortable on that side because he played there in college. But I mean, I should point out, even early in camp, remember Dan Moore had been operating as the starting left tackle because Tuke came into camp a little bit banged up. So that's also where they started breaking him in at this level. It doesn't make a ton of sense. I'd be curious to go back and look at their quotes about Dan Moore Jr. when they drafted him. I'm sure there wasn't a whole lot of "we're bullish on starting him week one in Buffalo" type stuff said. I can go look that up after I hang up with you. But yeah, I mean, it just makes me think that, you know, they don't have an A plus at either position, and thus they're going to maybe settle for a couple of B minuses or something like that, if that makes sense.
If they're both B minuses, I would be doing somersaults in the streets if I were a Steelers fan.
I was being generous with that off the head grade there.
Well, you're a nice man. Brian Batko joining me, Adam Crowley here on 105.9 The X. How big a loss is to it for at least these three games? And, man, is it reasonable to even expect him to be back at 100% this year? Because I would think if he's a little overweight, as Keith Butler said, then if you're rehabbing from an injury, it's going to be tough to shed that poundage too.
Yeah, I mean, I had that same thought seeing him early in camp, those open practices when fans were there. I mean, anybody who got a free ticket could go down and see, and if they caught a glimpse into it on the sideline, he didn't look his best. I didn't want to say it because, I mean, who the hell am I to say that? I'm a sports writer, and he's a multi-million dollar professional athlete who could throw me over the hill I'm standing on right now. But, yeah, I mean, Butler pretty much confirmed it, that they're a little concerned about that part of it too. I'm sure that's tied to the knee injury. We don't know the severity of it. So I hesitate to really get into how well, if he's going to be 100% this year, but what I will say for sure is, yeah, it changes the calculus for this defense, at least early on in the season, these first 3 weeks and however many more he misses, because, you know, when you came into this season, kind of going down the list of strengths and weaknesses, pros and cons on that side of the ball, you knew what the weaknesses were, a couple secondary spots, maybe inside linebacker, maybe. But it always came back to, but look how good they are up front. That defensive line is going to make life easier on everybody. Well, guess what? Now there's a big hole there as well. So especially against an offense as dynamic as Buffalo's could be. And I mean, the Raiders can do some things too. The Bengals, they might be feisty. Their O-line might stink, but yeah, it can't make you feel great now about this defense going into the early portion of things.
Brian, we were talking about the Steelers' offensive line. I want to go back there for a moment. People who were excited or are still excited about Matt Canada taking over for Randy Feuchner, I think because of the way the offensive line is going to be structured with so little experience on that left side from center on over, I think you might see a lot of the 2.2 seconds from snap to throw from Roethlisberger again. Like, I don't anticipate it looking that much different in the early portion of the season.
Or if it's not that empty set, five wide, shot done immediately, you know, dink and doink, it'll be something else that Canada schemes up to take pressure off the O-line, right? Whether that's, you know, the jet sweep type stuff or a whole lot of motions and shifts, which he's going to do anyway, but, you know, maybe you take fewer calculated risks in terms of plays that are going to take a little bit longer to develop downfield. Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, there's even more pressure now on a guy like Canada, who I do think is very good. I like what I've seen from the Steelers offense, not just in the practices against their own defense, but certainly scheme-wise in these preseason games. It lines up with what everybody knew about Canada coming in. He does have a good football mind, as mercurial as his path has been. The guy knows offenses, X's and O's. So, but job's going to be harder when you don't have big guys up front who can get the job done. Maybe they will and surprise us all, but certainly on paper, you feel like Matt Canada is going to have to bring his A game or his A plus game to Buffalo.
Alex Highsmith, in a recent ESPN prediction publication, was noted as the surprise potential player for the Steelers this year. And the prediction was that he will have double digit sacks. Can you see that happening? Do you think that'll happen?
Yeah, I can see that. That wouldn't surprise me. I mean, Bud Dupree was on pace to get well into double digits next year. I think 9.5 is probably the perfect over-under for a guy like Highsmith. What could hurt him is Melvin Ingram coming in and playing a large share of the snaps. But I guess if you put it this way, Crowley, will those two combine, will the right outside linebacker combine for 10-plus sacks? Mm-hmm. I'm very comfortable saying that. And really, when you're using, you know, two guys that replace one in Dupree, I think you can be confident and comfortable with that, no matter how that sausage gets made.
Brian Batko joining me here, Adam Crowley, filling in for Mark Madden on 105.9 The X. I pause 5 seconds here to respond to a text from my wife asking me what I need from Giant Eagle for game day tomorrow. I'm making ribs. I also would like her to pick up some buffalo chicken dip. I hope she's listening to the program right now. That would actually be easier than texting. If you can hear me, send me a text, my lovely wife. Okay, there, I digress. Batko, the Steelers, I had them at 9 or 10 wins. I had them as the 7th seed in the AFC. With the loss of Tuitt, with the way that the O-line is constructed now, I think that's worth at least them losing one win. And that would change my prediction, I think. What say you?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I haven't officially moved off of 9 and 8, but if I went back and kind of did a game-by-game breakdown, I probably had them going 2-1 in these first 3 games, and I don't know how you can't feel a little bit worse about their odds. So maybe it's more like 1-2 to open the season, and I thought all along they'd be fighting for that 7th mm-hmm. seed, and it might depend as much on what they do as like who else comes out to be kind of good in the AFC. I mean, who knows what the Patriots are going to be now with Mac Jones as the starter? I could see them being that first wild card, or I could see them being pretty stinky again. Same goes for the Colts and Carson Wentz, even the Dolphins. Tua is a major unknown at this point. So I think they're going to be right there on the fringe, and that to me gives them a win-loss range of like 8-9, 9-8. If a lot of stuff goes right, 10-7, but if more things don't go right, I could see them losing as many as 10 games.
What do you do for the football games on Saturday? Before Sundays roll around and you got to be at Heinz Field or wherever the Steelers are traveling, what are you doing whenever you're watching football, just as somebody who enjoys the sport?
Well, I think tomorrow specifically, I'm going to have to do some yard work, which stinks, but I'm hoping to get in front of the TV at some point. There's a very good chance my 1.5-year-old will get dumped off on my parents in some form or fashion, whether mm-hmm. that's me like, you know, hey, I'll bring him over to hang out at the house. Meanwhile, I'm going to hole up in a room and watch the games, or if I even just, you know, get very blatant about it and leave him there and go somewhere. So that's pretty much my plan. We'll see if I can figure out a way to make that happen.
Father of the Year, Brian Batko. Thanks a lot, man.
I love parenting. See you, Crowley.
Appreciate it as always. Yeah, I've got a almost 2-year-old daughter as well, and game day is the most challenging day. Because you don't want to be a douche, and you want to watch your child along with your wife, but at the same time, as much as you love your child, you don't want to watch them at all. 412-333-9939. Tweet me at @_AdamCrowley. I have a potential solution for a big-time college football problem. We'll get to that next, and I'll tell you why the Steelers are going to finish behind the Browns. Crowley, in for Madden, 105.9.
Win your way to our 21 iHeartRadio Music Festival. 2 nights full of can't-miss moments. September 17th and 18th. At
quote the Big Lebowski right. Goodbye.
The X at 105.9.
So don't turn your back on the great one. Because it's not nice to fool around with Mother Nature. Woo! Ooh, looking so good.
Crowley, in for Madden, get after me on Twitter, @_AdamCrowley, all tweets sponsored by Labatt Blue Light Seltzer. I think the Steelers are going to finish behind the Cleveland Browns. I'm in agreement with a lot of national experts on that. When teams are close, and I think the Steelers, Browns, and Ravens are close, I look not at who's got the best players. I look at the weak points of the club. I guess it's 6 eggs, 6, whatever that saying is. But to me, you're only as good as your weakest link. The Steelers are inexperienced on the offensive line. 4 starts among the entire left side of that line. That's not good. There's a reason why teams don't want rookies to play on the O-line. If not a weakness, it's a major question mark. What's the Browns' biggest weakness? They've got a wonderful offensive line. They got great skill position players. They've got an all-world edge rusher in Myles Garrett, who may have been the defensive player of the year last year if he didn't get hurt. I think Clowney's overrated, but he's credible. The secondary should be improved. Greedy Williams, Grant Delpit should be healthy. They added two good safeties as well. I'm not sure the defense will be great, but I don't think it's going to be a big problem. The weakness for the Browns, to me, is Baker. But he's shown at least the ability to be an above-average quarterback with that great line and running game. So what's the bigger weakness? An above-average quarterback or an offensive line that has four starts among the entire left side that then takes your quarterback down a peg? I'd rather have the Browns situation. They've got one of the best rosters in the league. The Ravens, the defense should be good again, but they leave me wanting at their skill positions. They lost Dobbins. I don't love their line, but it's a toss-up to me who finishes second or third among the Ravens and Steelers. But the Browns, they don't got a lot of flaws, at least on paper. The Steelers could potentially be shambolic at one of the most important position groups. Therefore, I'll take the Brownies, 412-333-9939. Again, tweet me at underscore Adam Crowley. College football Saturday, tomorrow. Great college football games tonight. But you got conference realignment hanging over everything. I realize, Pitt fans, you feel like you're comfortable in the ACC. You're seeing a lot of the geographical rivals go out the window when it comes to conference realignment, and who knows where things are going to go in the future. If the ACC loses Clemson and Florida State, how will Pitt fans feel about their standing then in the ACC? All of a sudden, that version of the ACC then looks a whole hell of a lot like the Big 12 version without Oklahoma and Texas. It's a scary thing. I think it all becomes a lot less scary if, and this is a big if because you need all the conference commissioners to get on board with it, you can mandate that every single team in Power 5 has to schedule at least two Power 5 opponents every single year. I am so on board with that. I would love to run for Mark Emmert's position in the NCAA, even though he doesn't really have any power as it relates to football. I'd love to be part of ESPN's brass. There we go. There's a guy who actually has power in college football. And I would love to say it's mandated. You got to play two Power 5 opponents every single year outside of your conference. And if that's the case, then I do think you see more of West Virginia and Pitt every single year. I think you see more Pitt-Penn State, although that's a wonky relationship at this point. And I think most of that has to do with Penn State being scaredy cats. Scaredy Nittany Lions. But I think if you mandate that two out of your three games have to be Power 5, you'll see some sexy matchups, right? The Ohio State-Oregon matchup we're about to get this, not this weekend, but coming up. UCLA-LSU. You'd see stuff like that. But among teams where the conference doesn't exactly give you all that you're wanting as it relates to rivalries, I think you'd see these teams schedule more of their regional rivals. West Virginia, Maryland, West Virginia, Virginia Tech, Pitt, Penn State, Pitt, West Virginia with the backyard brawl. And even if you wound up with conferences being spread out, not only because of geography, but because of the almighty dollar, you could still have your little footprint rivalries that make up so much of why college football is the best. College football is all about the rivalry. It's about being able to drive to your opponent's stadium and be a jackass and have them throw things at you and get into back and forths with your enemy. Give it to me. Make it happen so even if the conferences are all out of whack, you can get Pitt, West Virginia every single year. Or Pitt, Penn State, or West Virginia, Maryland, or Virginia Tech, Penn State, which they have on the books, I think, coming up too. Stuff like that. Give it to me. I think it makes college football what it is. And I think we're risking that being gone. It's already gotten taken away a lot, but I think we're risking seeing it go away for good unless something like that were to happen. 412-333-9939. Crowley in for Madden back in 30 seconds.
Considered so, dwelling to the FCC, do you think?
But I don't think Booger was ever
I don't think Booger was ever in question.